Hey, it's Andy. Welcome or welcome back to the Brownsbridge Church podcast. At the end of this episode, please take a moment to download the Brownsbridge Church app, where you can access all of our recent message content, as well as find out more information about Brownsbridge Church. And the app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend. But most importantly, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey.
Thank you, guys. That was amazing. I'm excited to be kicking off this three-part series today. And I've got a stool up here because I may need to sit down a little bit. My back has been bothering me this weekend, and you can just let the jokes fly. I know that in a couple months, I'm going to be turning 40, so everything's starting to break down just a little bit, okay? So if in the middle of this talk I have to sit down, you'll know why. But about a little over five years ago, I gave my first sermon, my first message on a Sunday morning here at Brownsbridge on this stage. And back then, Andy Stanley was the lead pastor here, and I was the adult ministries director, which means that I was over all the groups and Starting Point, men's, women's, marriage groups, all of our care ministries, and I led that team. And Andy came to me in May, and he said, Adam, do you want to speak this summer? And I took a big gulp and was like, yeah, sure, I'll speak this summer. And I'd communicated in a lot of our different environments. I communicated to students, I communicated to group leaders and done different trainings. I'd been a part of corporate events earlier on in my career, but I had never given a Sunday morning message on this stage. And following this guy, Andy Stanley, and if you're new here, we have this other guy that speaks, and he's all right, he's okay. His name's Andy, and he's known kind of around the country and around the world. And so to follow him is, it's just a really big deal, right? And you can have a tendency to make it more of a deal than it needs to be. So starting in May, I had about 6 weeks to prepare. And that's like all I focused on for 6 weeks was writing this talk and studying and rewriting and then rewriting again. And I'd bring it to Andy and I'd have him look at my notes. He'd be like, well, it's pretty good. And I'd be like, okay, I need to make it a little bit better. And finally, the week of, you may not know this, but when someone is speaking for the very first time, oftentimes we'll have them do what we call a run-through. It's basically where they come in this room, it's empty, except for about five people sitting right down here in the first couple rows. And we basically make you give the talk to an empty room, which is just, it's a lot of fun, let me tell you. So, you know, I did my run through, and afterwards I sat down front here with some of the production team and with Andy, and they kind of gave feedback, and it was mostly positive, and seemed like the talk was ready to go. And then afterwards, later that day, I was meeting with our production director at the time. His name was Elliot, and I'll never forget this. We were talking about what we were going to do over the weekend, what his plans were, what my plans were. And I told him, I said, yeah, I'm you know, I got a couple pockets throughout the weekend where I'm gonna just keep working, you know, keep kind of studying, keep kind of getting ready for Sunday. And then he kind of looked kind of puzzled, and he looks at me, he goes, hey, Adam, don't overcook it. He said, don't overcook it. And what he meant in that moment was, hey, you're ready. You just gave the talk to an empty room, and we gave you some feedback. Yeah, there's some minor tweaks, but you're ready. More preparation is not necessarily gonna help you right now. More preparation is probably gonna make you feel a little plastic, a little rehearsed. You're not gonna be able to be yourself up there. So, you know, if it's a piece of meat and it's in the oven, it is cooked, it is plenty cooked, you don't need to overcook it. Don't overcook it. And then, of course, what do? I go home over the weekend and I totally overcook it, right? Every moment I had, I was thinking about the talk and preparing. And this speaks to what I want to talk about over the next couple weeks, that sometimes in life, we can fall into what I call the more myth. And it's just the thought that whatever problem we come across in life, whatever we face, that the solution is more of something. We say to ourselves, well, if I just get more of fill in the blank, life would be okay. If I just get more of fill in the blank, then life would be better. If I just get more of fill in the blank, then I'll be able to get through this next season. It's the myth, it's the belief that more of something is the solution. More money, more time, more food, more fun, more Netflix, more stuff. We've all fallen into that last category, I would imagine. Every one of us in here is probably guilty of having too much stuff. Would anybody say, yeah, I probably have too much stuff in my life right now? I'll give you a quick quiz to let you know if maybe you have fallen into the more myth with stuff. In your garage, do you park your car or your stuff? Do you have a room dedicated to storage in your house? Like, yes, your children have a room, but so does your stuff. Your stuff has a room as well. And another question to kind of add on to that one is, do you ever take stuff out of the storage room, or do you only put stuff into the storage room? I know my wife and I are guilty of that one. We have this, you know, storage room in our basement, and it's like stuff just only seems to go in there. We never really take stuff out of there, and it makes me wonder, okay, well, what's the point of having a storage room if we're never bringing anything out of it? Here's another one. Potentially you've fallen for the more myth. Can you count the number of monthly or yearly subscriptions that you currently have? Do you know how many you currently have? When I was growing up, the only thing you could have a subscription to was the newspaper. Do you remember that? The physical newspaper. It was black and white and red all over. If you're under the age of 30, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But they used to, someone very early in the morning would drive by your driveway and they would throw this thing into your driveway, and you would go pick it up and actually open it up and read these different articles. They were all on these pages. It was a printed piece of paper that you would read. So growing up, that was the only thing you could have a subscription to. Well, nowadays you can have a subscription to anything, right? I mean, just about everything in our lives is on a subscription. So I'm curious, do you know right now off the top of your head, how many things are you signed up for currently? Do you know how many monthly subscriptions you have? How many yearly subscriptions you have? And then the last one, have you received an Amazon box in the last 7 days and you've not known what's inside? Guilty, right? Totally guilty. Or even better, you open the Amazon box and you go, huh, I don't remember ordering that. Those are just a couple questions to help us see how we can easily fall into the more myth, that if I just get a little bit more of something, it will be the solution. More is not always a good thing. As I was studying for this talk today, I came across an article that was entitled "The 23 Scary Side Effects of Sitting Too Much." So apparently too much sitting, more sitting is not necessarily a good thing. I know you all are sitting right now, and this is not gonna be really fun to hear, but here, I just wanna read some of these to you. The scary side effects of sitting: anxiety, depression, weak muscles, strained nerves, diabetes, hip problems, osteoporosis, increased risk of cancers, bad posture, heart disease, fat is stored, obesity, premature aging, premature death, overproductive pancreas, which apparently is a thing. I didn't know your pancreas could be overproductive, but apparently when you're sitting too much, your pancreas can be overly productive. Chronic fatigue, chronic pain, deep vein thrombosis, varicose veins, progress from exercise gone. That's literally the way they phrased it. Just whatever you've gained from working out, it's out the window. Weight gain, dementia, and slower brain function. So when it comes to sitting, more is not always more. And so if you feel the need to stand during this talk, we'll give you a hall pass today, okay? But we all have examples. We all have examples in our lives of more not necessarily being more. Maybe for you, you've been in an argument recently and you've discovered in the midst of that argument that more words were not helping. Like you were the one that was talking and like you kept trying to explain, kept trying to justify, wait, let me just say what I was thinking when I said that. I mean, I know I said the thing, but let me just explain it to you. And the more you talked, the more you realized, oh, this is not helping. Or you've been on the listening side of it and, you know, your spouse or your boyfriend, girlfriend, a good friend, a coworker, they're continuing to talk. And the more they talk, the worse it gets. And you're thinking to yourselves, you want to tell them, hey, more words are not helping in this moment. There's times in our lives where we got more and we regretted it. We got more and we got sick. We got more and we thought we wanted more of this thing, but we didn't realize that a whole host of other problems were gonna come along with it. So we got more of it and then we ended up with all these problems that we didn't foresee and then we didn't want. More is not always more. And that's where we get this phrase in life that all of us have heard at some point, that sometimes less is more. Sometimes less is more. And I wanna talk about this idea that less is more over the next few weeks, because when it comes to the Christian journey, when it comes to our relationship with Jesus, our relationship with God, there are a number of different areas throughout the New Testament that teach that less truly is more. So we're gonna look at some of those areas over the next couple weeks. And today I wanna talk about one area in particular that all of us could use a little less of. And I wanna start with a question. And this is a little bit of a personal question, I know, but are you better, you don't have to answer this out loud, are you better at being selfless, or are you better at being selfish? Are you better at being selfless, or are you better at being selfish? And if for you, like the first thing that comes into mind is, I'm better at being selfless. Like if that's you, you probably need to come up here on stage and give the rest of this talk, because you're gonna be more qualified than I am. But the reality is, most of us in the room, if I had to guess, would say, okay, left to ourselves, not the habits we've developed, not what we've learned as we've grown through life, where we've become less and less selfish maybe, but just left to ourselves, are we better at being selfish, or are we better at being selfless? I think most of us would say, well, yeah, the natural thing for me is to look out for me. The natural thing for me is to choose what I want. The thing that comes to mind initially is, okay, what do I want in this situation? It's not my first instinct to look to someone else. And the reality is we're born with this. I think about my four kids. I have four boys. I've got twins that are in sixth grade and then a second grader and a kindergartner, and I never had to teach them to be selfish. I didn't. I never, as a dad, when they were like, you know, a couple years old, I never got down on one knee and was like, hey, come here, buddy. Hey, listen, if there's ever a time in your life where you're not getting your way, I just want you to pitch the biggest fit that you can possibly pitch, okay? Listen, if you don't get what you want, if you don't get what you want, I just want you to start screaming and crying really, really loud. That's the most effective thing to do in life. In fact, if you can throw yourself on the ground and kick the ground a little bit, you know, that'll help even more. I never had to do that. I never had to teach him that. I never pulled him over and said, hey, listen, if somebody takes your toy, this is what you do. You walk right up to them and you start shoving them and hitting them. That'll really get you far in life. No, I didn't have to teach them that, right? I didn't have to teach them that when they didn't get their way, they needed to lie or cheat or steal. I never had to do that. They were born with it. So if I didn't teach them, then where did they get that? Well, obviously they got that from their mother. So I'm just kidding. She's not in here this service. She's down the hall in transit leading a sixth grade group. She'll be in here at 11, so I probably won't use that joke at 11. So good thing y'all got to come to the 9. No, the reality is, this is true of all of us, isn't it? Like, we're born with it. No one has to teach us to look out for number one, to prioritize ourselves over others. We are born with it. And in a lot of ways, we perfect it as we get older. And by perfect it, I mean, it's not that we become more and more selfish. It's just that we learn how to hide our selfishness, or we learn the socially acceptable forms of choosing ourselves over others. We know how to maybe put a good foot forward, and we make ourselves really look like we care about others, but in the end, we're actually just looking out for what our interests are. We're born with it, and then we perfect it as we get older, but the problem is, left unchecked, Our selfishness will undermine our lives. At a minimum, it will rob us of moments of life that we could experience. At worst, it could potentially ruin our lives. We can lose relationships. We can ultimately find ourselves alone in life because nobody likes being around people that simply care about themselves. It's kind of like the comedian Brian Regan. He talks about the me monster. That, you know, you go to a party or you go to some function and you start talking to somebody and you can very quickly tell that, oh, it's all about them. They're like, they start talking and it's like, me, you know? And then like you try to jump in the conversation and maybe turn the conversation to yourself and you know, you think, okay, well now we're gonna start talking about something else and they just go, me, you know? No, nobody wants to be around the me monster. We've all experienced that from people. That even when they're talking about other subjects, they very quickly can bring it back to themselves. The reality is more self will lead to less life. When we are selfish, we ultimately undermine ourselves. And Jesus talked about this. He actually put it this way in the Gospel of Luke chapter 9. He's talking with his disciples and he's telling them about the things he's gonna have to suffer when he goes to Jerusalem. And they're all kind of disagreeing and pushing back. And Jesus ends up telling them this. He says, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. And he's not talking about self-preservation here. He's not saying, hey, if you're standing on the railroad tracks and the train is coming directly at you and you choose to save your life by stepping off the railroad tracks, you're gonna lose it. He's not saying, hey, we know that we can preserve our lives, make our lives longer by exercising and eating well. And if we're sick, we need to take certain medications. He's not saying, hey, don't take those medications. Hey, don't work out. Don't eat. Don't try to save your life. He's not talking about self-preservation. He's talking about self-prioritization. Prioritizing ourselves at the expense of other things and other people. He says, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. And when it comes to self, more is not always more. That more self can actually lead to less life. But here's the thing. We already knew that, didn't we? I mean, you knew that when you walked in the doors this morning. You didn't need me to tell you that. I mean, that's something we just discover is true as we go through life. In fact, these first words of Jesus, they're not even necessarily a Christian statement. They're just ancient wisdom. And there were people hundreds of years before Jesus that said very similar things. This is not a Christian thing. It's just a life thing. We know this. We know that focusing on ourselves at the expense of others is not a good thing. Yet, we still have selfish moments, don't we? We still have seasons maybe where we're overly focused on ourselves. We know it's not the right thing to do, but still we find ourselves time and time again being selfish. A couple weeks ago, I had a long day at work and I came home and I'm currently coaching my twins' football team. And so got home, ate a real quick bite of dinner, got the kids dressed in the car. We get to football practice. We're out there in the heat for a couple hours. We get home, I get them changing, get their laundry in, and I come into the kitchen and I'm exhausted. It's about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And I just wanna get a bite to eat and kick my feet up for a few minutes. And as I walk into the kitchen, I see that the sink is filled with dishes. And I know that Kelly was taking care of our younger two. She was running them here and there. And I know that we had been gone, obviously. So the other kids, my older two who normally help out with that, they couldn't do it. And I see the dishes sitting in the sink, but then I think about, no, I just wanna get something to eat and go kick my feet up. And I know the selfless thing to do in that moment, to serve my wife as she's working on stuff and trying to help out with our two younger boys. I know the selfless thing to do for my twins, you know, because they've got schoolwork and they need to get to bed. They've got to get up early for school the next day. I knew the selfless thing to do was just to jump in and do the dishes. But in the moment, I'm only thinking about one thing, and that's my desire. It's what I wanted to do in the moment. The last thing in the world I wanted to do was to dive into that task. And y'all, I'm the pastor. I was in the process of preparing a message on being selfless, and in that very moment, I was not being selfless. I was being selfish. So it's not just enough to know that we shouldn't be selfish, and we should be selfless, and we should live our life for others. And if we're ultimately more of self, we'll lead to less life. It's not just enough to know that. If knowing doesn't cure it for us, then what do? And this is what's so beautiful about what Jesus says next. He wasn't done when he made that statement, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. He gives us in his next words an invitation. And for many of you in the room, you've been in church a long time, you've been a follower of Jesus a long time, this will not be a new invitation. For some of you, it will be brand new. But either way, I hope that we all can hear it in a new way today and through a new lens today. Here's the invitation that Jesus gives. Luke 9:24, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life, and Jesus is not talking about dying, physical death here. He's talking about how when we put something center stage in our lives, we actually give ourselves to that thing. We lose ourselves to that thing. You can hear people say it, oh yeah, he's lost himself in this hobby, you know? We can lose ourselves to our jobs. We can lose ourselves to a project that we've jumped into. We can lose ourselves to the pursuit of power, the pursuit of possessions, the pursuit of money, the pursuit of success. So maybe it's not even a question of if we will lose our life, but rather what will we lose our life to? And this is where Jesus gives us his invitation. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will save it. Whoever loses their life for me will save it. When Jesus says for me, what he means is when we lose ourselves into a life that is shaped by faith in him, when we lose ourselves in following him, when we find those moments, whether small or big, where we have one thing that we want to do, but then we have this other thing that Jesus has been speaking to us about, or he's been leading us in, or maybe something we read in our devotional or something we talked about in our community group. And those two things are at odds with one another. I got something I want to do, but then I got something that in following Jesus, I feel like I should do or that he's leading me to do. That's what it looks like to lose our life for Jesus, when we choose his way over our way. When Jesus says that we do this, when we do this, Jesus says that what we get in return is life. Whoever loses their life for me will save it. And again, it's not self-preservation in that moment. It's true life that we experience in Jesus. It's the joy, it's the peace, it's the love that we get to live in and walk in when we choose his way over our way. This is why all throughout the New Testament authors use this one word. In fact, it's one of, I think, the most important words in the Christian journey. And it's the word as. And that's one S, not two, okay? I know what some of you were thinking, all right? It's the word as. Throughout the New Testament authors use this word. They say love as, forgive as, live as, treat each other as, bear one another's burdens just as. And of course, following that, they always talk about Jesus or even Jesus himself said, love as I have loved you. Jesus washed the disciples' feet that last supper. And he says, as I've done for you, go and do for others. So Jesus is the model for us in our lives. He shows us the life that we are to live. But here's the beautiful thing. He's not just a model. Because the reality is there's a lot of models of selflessness out there. We could look a lot of different directions and find principles for our lives that we should live out. But Jesus doesn't leave it at that. Jesus doesn't just say, hey, just do as I do. That when the scriptures teach, hey, forgive as the Lord forgave you, there is a personal element to it. The authors of scriptures are teaching us, hey, look to your own personal experience of Jesus, what you have experienced from him. That's what you're supposed to turn and offer to others. So it's not just the principle. It's not just the principle of what to do. It's actually the power to do it. He doesn't just inform us of what to do. He actually transforms us and gives us the power to do it. We don't have to just muster up our love for others. As followers of Jesus, we don't just go out and go, okay, today I'm gonna be forgiving. Like, ooh, I gotta forgive this person. I'm gonna try. No, Jesus says, hey, as I have done for you, which means it starts by us receiving the gift of Jesus's love. It starts with us putting our faith in him. It starts with us choosing to follow him. And as we follow him, we experience the life that he gives to us. And then we get power to live out those things in our life, not just the principle of what we should do. This is why Jesus in John 15, as he was with his disciples, he said, abide in me. Abide in me. Stay connected to me. Live in a constant relationship with me. And when you abide in me, you will produce much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. Apart from me, you can have all the principles in the world. You can have all the teachings in the world, all of the great wisdom in the world, but you're not gonna be able to live it out in and of yourself. You're not gonna be able to live it out in your own strength. But if you stay connected to me, if you abide in me, then what happens is my life, you experience my life in you, and that begins to overflow into every area of your life. It's not in your strength. It's in my strength flowing through you. It's what Jesus was teaching to his disciples when he said, abide in me. The author of Hebrews in Hebrews chapter 12 says to throw off everything that hinders and then fix our eyes on Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And this is what it looks like for you and I to abide in Jesus today. The disciples had Jesus there. They could walk around. They could touch him. They could see him. For us, we don't have that. But the author of Hebrews didn't have that either. And what he said was, hey, you gotta fix your eyes on Jesus. So it's shaping our lives after our relationship with him through reading the scriptures, through finding time to pause during our days and pray and connect with God, through getting in community with other people that can encourage us in life and cheer us on in life, people that we can be real with and vulnerable with, share our stuff with them. And in the midst of that community, we experience more of that life. We fix our eyes on Jesus. And as we look to him, we not only get a model of the life that we are to live, we get the motivation to live it. We get the power to live it. He doesn't just inform us. He transforms us. It's his strength in us that allows us to be selfless. And when we have less of self, we experience more life. This past summer, I mentioned this last week, but we had an opportunity to take our twins on their first mission trip through Global X. It's part of our organization that sends people on trips all around the world. And once your kid hits sixth grade, you can start to take them on these international journeys, these international mission trips. And so we took them to Costa Rica this summer and had an opportunity to serve for a week in a place called Pavas, which is one of the most poverty-stricken areas in the world. Something like 60,000 people live in poverty within just a few square miles. And we served there for the week. In the morning, we were helping paint a school and kind of make this school look more bright, more lively, and got to interact with some of the kids there. And then in the afternoons, we served this place called the Hope Center, which serves food and helps family in the heart of the slums there in Pavas. And as is the case so often with trips like these, if you've ever been on one, you've experienced this, but it was a remarkable week. To be able to serve in that way was life-changing in a lot of ways. My boys have grown up here in Forsyth County. They've been here their whole life. They've experienced our school system, which I think is one of the best school systems in the world. They've experienced the affluence of our county. They haven't been face-to-face with a lot of poverty, a lot of people that are scraping by. And so for them, you know, my prayer was that they would be able to jump in and really experience the week for what it was and what it is. And they just did an incredible job doing that. I wasn't sure how it was gonna be. I wasn't sure how they were gonna respond, how they were gonna react to a completely different lifestyle than what they experience here. But man, I was just so proud of the way they jumped in and they served. And so Saturday morning, we were eating breakfast. We were about to go to the airport and fly out. And I was just sharing this with them. I said, boys, I just am so proud of you. I'm so proud of the way you served this week. I'm so proud of the way you jumped in and got shoulder to shoulder with these kids and you loved on them and you developed relationships and they didn't even speak the same language, but my guys just jumped in and loved on them. I told them I was proud of them for eating just about whatever got put in front of them, which was rice and beans for most of the meals, even breakfast. It was rice and beans, rice and beans, rice and beans. But even with that, they had great attitudes. And so I was just telling them this on Saturday morning. I'm so proud of you. And my son, Roddick, he said, Dad, yeah. You could tell he was really like thinking. He's really pensive. And he was like, you know, Dad, even though we were serving the whole time, it was still a really fun week. He kind of pauses and he thinks for a little bit more. And he goes, yeah, it was like way better than Disney World. Meanwhile, I melt into a puddle on the floor over here as like the proudest dad ever. Like, oh my gosh. But what he said in that moment is just an indication that he's getting it. And that was the hope in taking them on this trip. And that's the hope that we have for everyone that we want to take a trip or to step up and serve in some way. This Be Rich season, taking on one of these service projects, the hope is not just that we would bless our community and bless the organizations, but that you would be blessed in it. And that all of us would see, oh yeah, it's not more self that leads to more life. It's actually less self that leads to more life. And that even though we're serving, it can still be more fun than Disney World. But again, we don't get there on our own. We can't just muster up the energy or the courage to do this on our own. We have to have the life of Jesus moving in us, stirring us to have the power to do that. So today I want us to start where I think we start every bit of our journey with our Heavenly Father and with our Savior, Jesus. A couple months ago, I've shared this a couple times, but I heard this quote that our journey to God does not begin with us vowing to do things for God. So it doesn't begin with us vowing to leave here today and not be a selfish person. It doesn't begin with us vowing to do things for God, but rather just the opposite. It begins with us confessing our inadequacy. And I imagine for all of us in here, we're gonna hear this talk and we'll leave and we might even be pumped up to like, I'm really gonna be better this week. I'm gonna be better this week. I'm gonna be better this week. But then tomorrow night or Wednesday night or Friday morning, we're gonna bump into our own me monster. We're gonna bump into our own selfishness. And in that moment, I want you to do exactly what we're gonna do right now. I want us to start with confession. We're just gonna confess, God, I'm selfish. I'm not all the time selfish. I'm not like a bad person. Nobody in here is, you know, horrible in that way. But left to my own devices, left to my own natural instinct, I'm gonna choose myself first. So God, I'm selfish. And when you hit that moment in life, you just pause and you confess the same thing. God, I'm selfish. Help me to be selfless. Then we're gonna add on this ending, just as you, Jesus, were selfless for me. So I'm gonna ask us all just to close our eyes right now, wherever you're watching from, whether you're in the room, whether you're watching online, just close your eyes. And I wanna ask you to say this out loud, this confession that we're gonna make corporately, and that hopefully you will remember when you bump into moments in the days to come and the weeks to come where you see it begin to rise up in you. Just repeat after me. Say, God, I am selfish. Help me be selfless. Just as you, Jesus, were selfless for me. God, we confess that to you today. We've tried on our own and we may get it right some of the time, God, but we will eventually find ourselves wanting. We'll find ourselves falling short of the life that you have offered to us. And so God, we just confess it, that we're weak, but we thank you that you are strong and that Jesus, as we set our eyes on you, as we fix our eyes on you, as we abide in you, our eyes see, our minds see, our hearts see and experience what you have done for us. And that becomes not just the model of the life that we're to live, but the motivation. Not just the information, God, but the inspiration to live out the life that you have for us. So God, would you help us to do that this week? Would we remain in you? And let your life flow through us. We pray it all in your name, Jesus. Amen. Well, thank you so much for being here today. Don't forget, we have a number of different service opportunities, berich.org/serve. A lot of great ways to get involved in that way. And then the pop-up shop is open as well. You guys have a great week. You're dismissed. We will see you next Sunday.